Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse is on a mission. It's not a political mission. It's a mission to see our sons and daughters grow up and become functional adults. Here he is talking about it on CBS television.
It's about us, the parents and the grandparents, who are not doing enough to help our kids understand that scar tissue is something to be celebrated. Developing a work ethic, it often stinks and aches and is painful at the time you're going through it, but it makes you tougher. Scar tissue is the basis of future character, and we're not having those conversations with our kids, and that's kind of a unique thing in human history. We've raised our kids insulated from work. They've grown up sort of being protected from work instead of being taught that there's freedom to be found in finding meaning in work, not avoiding work. And right now, production and consumption are categories that most of them don't really experience when they're 12 and 14 and 16, the way most people in human history past would have.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. This is a special edition of Family Life Today. We're live from the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. Our guest is Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, and we'll talk about your kids becoming adults. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us on the Wednesday edition, a very special Wednesday edition because we're not where we usually are. I just need to tell you I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with our guest today. Before we get to that, though, share with everybody where we're recording these programs, will you?
We are at the Museum of the Bible, the grand opening, and I'm looking over my left shoulder at the Capitol, and if I look far enough back, way over my left shoulder, I can see the Washington Memorial back there.
Pretty amazing place, and this museum is spectacular.
It is spectacular, and so we're celebrating a 430,000 square foot museum that declares the best-selling book in the history of the world.
Now, can I tell you about what my bone pick was?
You know, here's our audience knows this. Ben, you don't know this about Bob, but he finds fresh ways to offend our guests right off.
Really?
And I know you're not used to people
Bob
coming at you
hard. Seems like a really nice man.
Here's the deal. Our guest is very active on Twitter, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, so I was listening in to NPR about 6 months ago when he was on their program, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I tweeted that day, and I said, Senator Ben Sasse is holding his own with Peter Sagal, doing a great job on this. And I kept waiting for a like or a retweet or something. Nothing. Zero. Now, I know I'm no Jonah Goldberg, right?
I'm looking over his shoulder at his assistant. His assistant is making note of this right now.
That's right.
I bet the next tweet you make is going to be, he's going to be on it.
I expect a little Twitter love.
I will find a way to love your passion on Twitter.
Thank you very much.
Well, Senator Ben Sasse joins us on Family Life Today. Welcome, Ben. I hope you'll stay.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for your ministry. My family has benefited from it, and you're right. What a glorious venue. This is a great museum.
It really is. Ben is a fifth-generation Nebraskan. He is married to Melissa, three children, was a wrestler at Harvard. Didn't go for the academics. He went to wrestle because they haven't lowered the standards of how you could get in, and he couldn't make the Cornhusker.
No, wait, who's
wrestling
insulting
team?
Who now?
He's just telling the truth.
I'm just saying what he wrote in his book. So you know, he declared it.
I couldn't play sports for the Huskers or the Razorbacks, so I had to go someplace.
Oh, now
where
you
they
could
really,
play for the
really
Razorbacks. Now you're hitting us. You're hitting us back. He went to Oxford and then graduated from Yale with a PhD and has written a book. And I've got to say, I really like your book. You're putting your finger on a pulse of one of the most important issues taking place in our country. It's called The Vanishing American Adult, Our Coming of Age Crisis and How to Rebuild a Culture of Self-Reliance. Ben, what prompted you? I know you were a president of a college in the Midwest. Was that experience what prompted you to write this book?
I think more than anything else, but two others feed into. I think we have goofy politics right now, where so much of what's really important in American life is in culture upstream from politics, and our political discussions are pretending you can fix politics with more politics. That's not true. So that was a little bit of my motive. But also, my wife and I are parents, and we have three little kids, and we look at the world they're coming of age in, and we think about the friends that we deliberate and pray with and wrestle with about how to raise our kids, and it feels like there's a big desire out there for people to have a conversation about how to parent well. And there aren't a lot of venues for that to happen. Your program is one of the special exceptions.
Well, we're about to launch a brand new initiative. In fact, it is the largest initiative in our 41-year history, the Parenting Initiative. It's going to be launched with a movie that Bob's helped create called Like Arrows, which is a movie about parenting. And it is accompanied with a training package, an 8-session video-assisted training package that's going to be available online next summer, called The Art of Parenting. And this is an all-out effort. We're going to launch it initially in Spanish and Mandarin, as well as, obviously, English.
Wonderful.
And so we're hoping for 1 million parents in the next 3 years in the top 3 languages of the world. And so we've got our finger on the same pulse you do. We've got to equip parents because the next generation is on the line. Don't you agree?
I do. It is the most important calling we all have. As believers, we're parenting and pastoring the first church of the home and trying to catechize and raise our kids to become adults that can live lives of gratitude to God.
You see the home as more primary to how we do as a culture than where you're serving vocationally in the United States Senate, right?
Exponentially more important, right?
Unpack that a little bit, because I think a lot of us look around and go, power is in Washington, what happens here is what shapes our lives, but we believe that what happens around the kitchen table shapes things more than what happens in Washington.
Hear, hear. I mean, people are created in the image of God, and in a fallen world, we need government to restrain evil. There are all sorts of important public policy functions around infrastructure investment and providing for the common defense and national security. There are lots of very meaningful callings that happen inside this city, but the first institution of life, not just American life, but Adamic life, is going back to the place where two become one and produce eternal souls that are going to serve their neighbors forever and glorify the God who is.
Is that perspective generally lost in our society today, that family is and must be strong for a civilization to survive?
I think we have a hollowing out of local community, and when the most fundamental institution is the family, it is being thrown about by the same tides that are undermining so much of local community and culture. And people understandably worry about that and panic about that, but then they sort of look to distant powers to solve that problem. The right way to begin solving the problem is to do what you're called to do and raise your kids properly. Mm-hmm.
Ben, I sit in a White House briefing room 25 years ago. And there was presentation after presentation made by the way the federal government was addressing the needs of people around our nation back then. And as I sat there, it started to hit me how many of those programs, policies, and budgets were built around basically the dysfunction and the destruction of a family unit. Then if we knew how to do marriage and family right, many of those programs
right
would go away.
Right.
We need today a fresh return to a moral and spiritual awakening rooted in the American family, where moms and dads realize, like Bob said, they are the power brokers. They're raising the next generation that we're going to turn our factories over to, that are going to provide the culture for the next generation of our nation.
Tomorrow's workers and tomorrow's soldiers and tomorrow's neighbors and tomorrow's entrepreneurs and tomorrow's moms and dads are those kids that your listeners are shepherding today. Charles Murray, a thinker at the American Enterprise Institute, has a great line about what government is for. He says, government is supposed to take the difficulty out of doing certain things, but we don't want the government to take the difficulty out of doing everything, because some things that are difficult create scar tissue, which is the foundation of future character. I want the government to take the difficulty out of walking home from a restaurant late at night, because you shouldn't be subjected to violence just because you're walking in a dark street at night. Government should take the danger and the problem and the challenge out of walking home late at night in terms of violence. But government should not solve the problem of how to deal with the fact that my six-year-old was thrown up in the middle of the night 2 weeks ago. My wife and I need to go through those struggles at 3 a.m. together, both to be co-laborers together. She often believes that I'm not pulling my share at the moment that I say, let me take the kid and get him into the shower, and somehow the pile of vomit that's left, we just have to divide up that labor. But it's also about the fact that our kid sees us there holding him in that minute of trial. We don't want government to come in and displace everything that needs to be done by families.
Share how your dad and your mom, the images that you have embedded in your heart and soul and mind of how they did that for you.
Yeah, so I think the one thing that's just fundamentally true about the moral architecture that I have, you know, echoing through my head as a child is my parents are flawed sinners, like we all are. But I always knew that they were there for me. There was never a chance that dad wouldn't be there when I was in a time of need, or that mom wouldn't be there when I was in a time of need. And mom's touch and dad's voice are still prominent in my memory. Unfortunately, my parents actually, I'm a product of a divorce, and my parents divorced before I was two. And both had remarried by the time I was four, and started wrestling through all the hard stuff of, they're both believers now, and have wrestled through a lot of those issues. But I come from a very imperfect, broken background with two families that are loving, and I went back and forth from age four on between these two houses, and they ultimately kind of came together and repented to me as their kid about some of the stuff that had gone wrong earlier.
We have a ministry to blended families as a part of family life, and what you're pointing out is that when blended families can come back around and address with their kids, these were the issues, here's what we did, here's what was right, here's what was wrong, here's where we messed up, that course correction can be just as powerful in the life of a child as if a family had stayed intact. Kids who grow up in broken homes where they see moms and dads working out some of the past difficulties, that can lay a great foundation for them going forward.
That opportunity for reconciliation becomes a model of mm-hmm. us recognizing that we have delegated authority from God as we're raising our kids, but eventually our kids are not just going to be our dependents and our offspring, they're going to become brothers and sisters before eternity. And one of the most fundamental things that my wife and I want to be sure we're doing right by our kids is we want them to see us repenting to each other and to them.
I'm glad you shared what you shared, because what you described, you said your dad and mom said they would be there for you. And yet they divorced when you were two. They weren't believers, didn't know Jesus Christ. I understand why that happens. I really do. But still, they were able to provide a redemptive model. And a lot of our listeners, well, I'd say this, all of our listeners come from broken situations. And a listener talked to me recently and says, you know, too many of your shows end with a perfect story.
Yeah.
You need to realize where we're living out here. And I thought, you know, we all are living there. We share a lot of how things are broken, but it is good to give people hope that in the midst of brokenness, you can have a situation like where you bragged on your mom and dad. And you said, you know, do I wish they'd stay together? Undoubtedly, you do. But nonetheless, in the midst of that brokenness, they were able to communicate something that was very powerful to you that you now are passing on to your kids.
So if I were to sit in front of you, a group of young parents, and ask you to tell them what you observe as the gaps, the biggest areas where parents today are not connecting the way they should with their kids, could you name the top 3, 4, 5?
Let me not answer yes yet, because I have a 3, 4, 5, but I don't know if I've got them rank ordered the right way. Okay. But let me tell you one of the things I'd start with for them. We live in an extraordinary time with lots and lots of blessings. We live at the richest time and place in all of human history. There are lots of people who are going through bumps, and there have been economic downturns since 2008, etc. But we still live at the richest time and place in human history. And there's a lot that's wonderful about that. There's a lot that passively happens that lead us to drift and not recognize that our kids don't have a lot of necessity in their lives. Throughout almost all of human history, hunter-gatherers, agrarian agrarianism from 11,000 years ago till the Industrial Revolution, the last 150 years of the factory world and the rise of cities, in all of these contexts, there have always been a bunch of needs that the family had that the kids had to contribute to. As recently as 1870, so at the end of the U.S. Civil War, most economic historians estimate that children under the age of 14 added more than 30% of the economic value to their household.
Wow.
Kids that are pre-puberty back then, puberty comes a little earlier now, but used to be sort of a marker about age 14, more than 30% of the value of the household is from kids. And so kids have always grown up throughout most of human history as they went from 8 to 10 to 12 to 14, not primarily with job choice and specialized career choice, but with doing more of what mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and aunts and uncles did to contribute to the community and to the tribe. And what we have now is kids who largely come of age without a distinction in their belly between production and consumption, but they just have progression through years or grades in school and lots of consumer experiences outside of school. And that's actually not good for their souls to not learn how to develop their potential and their giftedness to serve their neighbor. And we're not helping our kids learn how to be producers.
They need to detassel corn in the summer, right?
Hear, hear.
And they
foundation
need,
of character.
They need bean walkers, right?
Unfortunately, chemicals have almost made bean walking and weeding big bean fields obsolete. But that's the first job I ever had as an 8-year-old.
And there is something about 8-year-olds being bean walkers. There's some hardship and some struggle that is good for an 8-year-old soul.
Great for a soul. I mean, and your parents or your aunts and uncles, whoever's managing that farm, can look out at the field afterwards and know if you did your work, because for those of your audience who don't haven't ever been around crop rotation, usually beans are following corn by a year, and so there's volunteer corn growing in those fields from last year, just leftover stuff, and as it grows, it's much taller than the beans, so you can see as far as the eye can that there's a bunch of corn out there that needs to be hoed out of those fields. An 8-year-old can add real value, and a mom and a dad can see from a distance whether they've gotten their work done.
And if the air conditioning goes out, and your kids need to learn that air conditioning is a relatively new luxury, right?
Yes.
Had this happen at your house?
Yeah, it isn't just production versus consumption. It's needs versus wants. We want our kids to understand the distinction between their true needs. And you need to meet your needs, right? We don't want our kids going to sleep hungry at night. But I don't want to meet all of my kids' wants. I want them to learn to limit and defer gratification. We live in Nebraska, which has, you know, huge temperature fluctuations from our winter to our summer. And my family and I had been in Colorado for some events summer before last when I was kind of working on this book. And in the middle of the night, our daughters are now 16 and 13, and our boy is 6. Our daughters then were, say, 14 and 11. And they came to my wife in my room in the middle of the night, getting back from Colorado where our air conditioner had gone out. It was like a 75-degree night. I mean, it wasn't hot. And they came to our room, and they thought they couldn't conceivably sleep in this house because they needed air conditioning. And I thought, oh, my. We're doing some stuff wrong here. What you need is us to turn off the air conditioning for the next month when it hits 100. That's what you need.
Talk to a listener who's gone to a toy store with their kid, or they're walking through Walmart and the kid sees something he wants. You have a way of addressing that with your children that I really like. Explain how you kind of unpack that decision.
I don't want this to sound too heavy-handed, but we want to meet all their needs, and we want them to learn how to help meet their needs and meet their neighbor's needs, but we want to meet a very small number of their wants, and we want them to understand that category. So sometimes if you want something, we're going to give them the thing that they want. But if they ever begin referring to a want as a need, we promise them, as out of love for them, we'll never do that. And so if my 6-year-old boy says something at the Walmart or the Target, I need that, and the right word was you want that, I get down on my knees so we're eye to eye, and I explain to him that those verbs are different things, and he just had bad grammar right there. And so there isn't any chance we're going to get this thing now that he wanted but he referred to as a need. And it turns out he's coming to love those grammar lessons.
He is learning to curb. He'll start to say, I really need catch, right?
We have some. He does. We have some friends who are wonderful about wanting their kids to be grateful for whatever food is put on the table, because it's going to meet their needs, and they can learn to have appetites that will desire these good things, even if it was Brussels sprouts and broccoli, and you didn't know it the first time. Their kids are never allowed to say they don't like food. They can refer to certain categories of food as not their favorite. Brussels sprouts are not my favorite.
I got some twins, and that's one of their favorite things. Not my favorite. Not my favorite.
How do your kids like growing up in your house?
We do a strange thing. I'm one of five people in the Senate who's never been a politician, and I think I'm the only commuter, or family commuter in the Senate. There are senators who commute, but their families are left behind. So we primarily live in Nebraska. The family's out here for a little bit of the year, but when I'm out here coming out to work Monday to Friday, I often bring a kid with me. And so they have different responsibilities when they're on the road with dad versus when they're back home with mom. So two of the three are usually with her on weekdays, and one travels with me, and we kind of homeschool / hybrid school. So they have chores they have to do here.
What are the ages of your kids?
16, 13, and 6.
And all of these rules and all of these grammar lessons and everything, do you get kids who roll their eyes and who say, this is not fair, my friends, this and that? Does that go on in the
South? Oh, absolutely. Okay. I mean, to be clear, we are not setting ourselves up as a model with this parenting book at all. We stumble and fall every single day in our house, but we have a theory of what we're trying to accomplish, and along with lots of other friends, we wanted to sort of deliberate and write this book on what is the problem of perpetual adolescence? Mm-hmm. What is this thing that's developing among us, because you can't tackle a problem unless you can name it. And then constructively, what are some habits we want to help our kids form? And so this book is an attempt to outline some of those habit formation constructive opportunities.
And when you're raising three kids whose last name is Sass, you just set yourself up, didn't you? I mean, if it's built into their DNA.
They are sassy way too often. Yeah. Fortunately, the German name is just Zasa or Sass, but they're regularly corrected for the sassiness.
Well, here's what I would say to parents who are listening to us today. If you are really interested in being countercultural in the truest sense of that word, I'd encourage you to get a copy of Ben's book, The Vanishing American Adult, and just sit and soak in it. Read your way through it, and it's going to affect the way you think. You're going to find yourself looking at your children through a different set of lenses, because the culture that surrounds them is an entitlement culture. Their friends are entitled to all these things, and it's easy for our kids to be conformed to that same thought process. What Ben's going to do is challenge your way of thinking, letting you peek behind the curtain into his growing up, and to also he and Melissa, as they are raising their brood of three. And I think it's going to benefit you in innumerable ways. Mm.
We have copies of Senator Sass's book, The Vanishing American Adult. If you'd like to get a copy, go to familylifetoday.com, and you can order it from us online at familylifetoday.com, or call, if you'd like to order, 1-800-FL-TODAY. This really is a great adjustment book for moms and dads. It will help you think differently about what you're doing and think about how you can bring some healthy challenge and struggle into your kids' lives. Again, the title is The Vanishing American Adult, Our Coming-of-Age Crisis and How to Rebuild a Culture of Self-Reliance. Order the book online at familylifetoday.com or call to order 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, as we think about the next generation and the challenges our kids are facing today, our goal here at Family Life Today is to provide husbands and wives and moms and dads with practical biblical help and hope so that we can flourish as families, so that your marriage and your family can thrive. And for that to happen, you need to understand God's design, God's purposes for marriage and family. You need to understand the impact of the Bible on marriage and family, as we're broadcasting live this week from the Museum of the Bible. Our goal here is to effectively develop godly marriages and families, and we're grateful for those of you who share our passion for this and who are partners in this goal. Every time you donate to support the Ministry of Family Life Today, you're helping us reach more people more regularly with the kind of practical biblical help that we seek to offer on this program. So thanks to those of you who are regular monthly legacy partners. We're grateful for your partnership with us. Thanks to those of you who will occasionally make an online donation or get in touch with us to donate. Your donations cover the lion's share of the expenses necessary to operate this ministry, our daily radio program, our website, our resources, and our events. And we're grateful for those of you who do reach out to help. If you're a regular listener, a longtime listener, and you've never made a donation, It's easy to do. You can go online to donate at familylifetoday.com, or you can call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate, or mail your donation to us at Family Life Today at Box 7111, Little Rock, Arkansas, and our zip code is 72223. Tomorrow, we're going to continue our conversation with Senator Ben Sasse as we're broadcasting live this week from the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. We'll talk more about how we can raise kids who have good problem-solving skills and good critical thinking skills. Hope you can tune in for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.